Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the fan, I got you for 5 hours on our opening day recap. 5 hour midnight ride as I take you all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm up show. 888-808-1019. Rami's still hanging around, but we'll have Nico and Fliegelman taking your calls. And that's right, all is right with the world. Are you ready? You know what? I forgot to mention this. All the times I've been yapping about how much I love baseball, I go on and on and on and on about the 162 and how great it is to be there with you every day. And I forgot to mention how we treat every one game like it's its own season. Are you ready for overreaction? And this is a good one. This is a great overreaction. Friday morning. Are you kidding me? For a Yankee fan? And that's it. Listen, Met fans, the entire offseason, I spent most of the time yesterday's open talking about the Mets, the Mets, the Mets, the Mets, the Met fan. I mean, listen, as we all do this Met-Yankee thing, is it trivial? Is it silly? Are we just being stupid with one another? Absolutely, but let's do it. Because obviously, the Mets have won the offseason. The Mets had this incredible, they Juan Soto, they're going to be so great. Everything that's gone on with the Mets. And just for today, overreaction. Clay Holmes doesn't pitch the way he pitched all of spring. Therefore, oh, what a failure. And then the way we are breaking down the at-bat of Juan Soto. Like, oh, well, was he trying to do too much? Is he trying to overcompensate for the contract? He swung at a pitcher. He swung at a slider from one of the best closers in baseball. I love it. I love it. The Yankees, Wells is going to be the greatest leadoff hitter of all time. Carlos Rodon is unstoppable. He's going to step in and save the New York Yankees like I suggested weeks ago. It's overreaction Friday, and I love it. But in serious, we'll get to the Mets in a second. We'll get to Juan Soto. Obviously, just having baseball back was awesome. I was at the game today. I know you heard from Keith. Keith was at the game as well. I saw him down at now I'm forgetting the name of the place. The dugout, whichever one he was doing, Billy's or whatever, one of those bars. I saw him. We saw everybody. It was a great day. It was a beautiful day. A little chilly, but sunny. But it was a great day to be in the Bronx. A great day to have baseball back. We'll have a little fun with the Yankees-Mets. Because today was, listen, Mets fans, you got to deal with it. You had the offseason. Day one, round one of 162 goes to the New York Yankees. Carlos Rodon outpitches Clay Holmes. And even though he had a good day, because he'll always have good days, Juan Soto strikes out to end the game for the Mets as they lose 3-1 to the Astros. But the Yankees take game one of the season 4-2. And I really want to talk about, we'll get into the home runs and obviously to get the season started the way it did with Wells and how much we've talked about him as the leadoff hitter and the dynamic of that and whether you like it or not and the no speed and what a traditional leadoff hitter looks like. And, you know, are they forcing this? How does this lineup going to work? You know, obviously without Juan Soto, they're going up against an ace in Peralta. You know, not one of the top pitchers in the league, but a very good starting pitcher for Milwaukee. But to me, it's not about the home run from Wells. It's not about the home run from Volpe. Like, if you're going to take anything from this game, for me, it's clearly Carlos Rodon. In a rotation, he's thrust it into the start for the home opener that nobody's happy about. It should be Max Fried. Obviously, it should be Gerrit Cole, as we saw him go out for, if you were at the stadium, I'm sure they showed it on TV, but the opening introductions, there's Cole walking out with the big brace on his arm and everything as he's dealing with the Tommy John, and hopefully we see him at some point next year. But Carlos Rodon thrust it into this start, thrust it into this extremely important role inside this rotation that is down Gerrit Cole, down Luis Gil, right now still with no Clark Schmidt, having Carlos Carrasco having to be a huge part of this. Will Warren, who the last time the Yankee fans saw him pitch in meaningful games besides the spring training, was pretty much awful every time we saw him last year. This rotation, as much as we complain about the losing Juan Soto and what the lineup could be and the lack of power and whatever our concerns are, this rotation was supposed to be its strength. And now not having those two guys, the rookie of the year in Luis Gil, and obviously the ace of the staff in Gerrit Cole, guys are going to have to step up. And yes, here we are, Overreaction Friday. I'm not going to tell you I now have faith that Carlos Rodon is going to be an ace for the New York Yankees the rest of the way, but I have to admit, you have to have loved what you saw out of Carlos Rodon if you're a Yankee fan. I talked about it yesterday. The idea of him starting in this game and the little bit of pressure. There is pressure on opening day. There's pressure to be thrusted into this spot. There's pressure of being the first guy out there for this rotation. There's just enough pressure on opening day where if he loses, all right, it's opening day. He didn't meet the task. It's one of 162. Let's hopefully next start is better. But if he wins, you say, oh, he handled the pressure of being the opening day starter. Oh, he had a good game. He handled things. And inside this game in particular, I thought we saw signs from Carlos Rodon that make me feel really positive about him leaving this game. One, the pitch mix. I mean, this is a guy who's traditionally been a fastball slider. I know last year they talked a lot about his pitch mix and trying to change it up and be less predictable. I thought this was by far, as a New York Yankee, period. Might not have been his most dominant start. It might not have even been his best start. But for me, I mean, we saw, watching it live, I can't remember the amount of, you know, get me over curveballs for first strikes. Like, his pitch mix, his ability to throw changeups, his ability to throw the curveball, he was getting, you know, throwing sliders for strikes and the swing and miss slider, which he got a ton of. I think he got 15 swings at sliders, 9 of 15 swing and misses. He had the ball down, he was able to locate, he was spotting the curveball early in the count to get guys off the fastball early in the count. I thought his pitching, not just throwing, not just dominating, not I'll throw a fastball by you and then fool you with the slider. Overall, his ability to get everything in, have it work as a cohesive just plan was as good as we've seen it. And then you get to the thing that you worry most about Carlos Rodon. Second, to me, is the idea of the big game. The pressure, the moment, how's he going to react to it? That's even secondary to the number one concern I have about Carlos Rodon, which is when the ball starts rolling in the wrong direction, how does he handle it? And I thought, without the ball really rolling, I mean, it wasn't a Indiana Jones situation where he was running for his life necessarily, but in the fourth inning, right? He gives up the home run earlier to attain, after the two home runs from the Yankees, he gives up the solo home run, make it 2-1. And then in the fourth inning, obviously the fiasco at the ground ball at first base, which, by the way, can a first baseman just run to first base? I know it's only the first time we've seen Goldschmidt, and I'm not going to go nuts about it, but he obviously had a better opportunity to get the out just running to first. Why are we obsessed with the PFP? Why are we obsessed with giving the pitcher that play? I'll never understand it. But after that debacle where he doesn't beat it out and he slips and falls and the entire crowd is collectively holding their breath watching Carlos Rodon on his ass worrying if we just lost another starting pitcher in this rotation. From that moment on, he comes back out. And I made sure I looked. His first pitch was a fastball high and it was 92. He was sitting at 94 to 96 the entire game. That first pitch is 92 and I'm like, oh, here we go. I mean, here we go. He's a little stiff. Something's up. I'm not saying he's devastatingly hurt. I'm not saying his ankle's going to fall off, but he got jarred something. That fastball's down to 92. We're going to have an issue. He gets through the fourth. And I remember I was talking to the guy next to me. When he comes out of that game, I said, that might be it for him. He just had that injury. He just had that issue where he fell, right? He's given up the home run. He had a couple guys on base in that inning, the inning before. It's opening day. The bullpen's rested. You got a day off tomorrow. I wouldn't be surprised if they just say, hey, listen, let's just call it a day. Good performance, four innings. You've thrown 67 pitches, I think it was, when he came out of that fourth inning. And it's just like, okay, let's ease into the season. Let's not push this thing. And instead, Boone sends him back out there, and he has a dominant 1-2-3, three strikeout fifth. And I felt like that was a spot in previous years with Carlos Rodon where he goes back out there after, whether he's embarrassed or angry or banged up, whatever happened at first base, for him to come back out there after finishing the fourth, going out there for the fifth and throwing his best inning of the game and getting three consecutive strikeouts. I thought that was a moment, and again, it's opening day, overreaction Friday. I'm not going to tell you that he won't go out and give up 10 runs the next start, but that's a moment where we have seen Carlos Rodon fold. That is a moment where we've seen the ball roll against him. He doesn't make the play. He barely gets out of that inning. He comes back after a long inning where the Yankees had a long inning and he was in the dugout for maybe 15 to 25 minutes. And he comes back out there and throws the best inning of the day. I thought that fifth inning was the turning point of the game. I thought that was a really good sign for Carlos Rodon. And I think he is so important to this team. And if he can go out there with his longer hair and his beard, and he's throwing 95, but he's throwing curveballs over for first pitch strikes. He's throwing changeups in spots. I haven't seen Rodon throw changeups. He's attacking with the changeup. He's throwing the changeup for strikes. He's throwing it down in the zone. Same thing with the slider. And he was asked in the postgame, what got so many swings and misses in the postgame? And I thought he nailed it. I was able to throw sliders for strikes early on in the game. So now they have to be aware of that pitch and know I can throw it for strikes. They've done so. His ability in this game to make pitches, to think, I think obviously Wells did a great job getting him through the game, calling the game. I thought it was a masterful job, and I honestly think you can make the case. That's the best version of Carlos Rodon we have seen in a Yankee uniform. We have seen more dominant versions. We have seen days where his fastball is 98 and he's blowing it by people. We obviously, the first couple of innings of the playoff game against the Royals where he's peacocking all over the mound. That was a pitcher. That was a pitcher yesterday who was able to locate his stuff, mix up his pitches, keep the hitters off guard, keep the hitters off balance, confuse the hell out of them, strike out Chirios three times swinging missing, who went 0 for 5 with five strikeouts in this game. But that, to me, was an unbelievably impressive performance from Carlos Rodon on opening day. The pressure of starting the season, not filling in for Cole, not, you know, everyone wants to see Fried instead of him, and instead he steps up there against, listen, a pedestrian hitting lineup. Again, this isn't. You know, he didn't go out there and do this against the Red Sox. He didn't go out and do this against one of the better hitting teams in baseball. But still, that performance was as sound a pitching performance as we've seen from Carlos Rodon. And he is going to be as important a player for this Yankee team as you can have. With this rotation in the state it's in, that he is a guy where you can look at and say, as he goes, so go the Yankees. If he has a good year, the Yankees can have a good year. If he's a disaster, the Yankees can be a disaster. That's how important and how pivotal this guy is, who's getting paid a hell of a lot of money, who was brought here to be the second ace of this staff. He was supposed to be what Max Fried is now paid to be. And Max Fried was paid because Carlos Rodon has been unable to be what Max Fried is paid to be. But in this start, opening day, I was extremely impressed with Carlos Rodon. Extremely impressed. And I hope it's a sign of things to come, because I think, you know, and as we talk about Clay Holmes, and we'll get to it, Met fans, and his lack of mixing up his pitches, his lack of, you know, mixing in that changeup and going to the sinker that he, you know, has been a dominant reliever with. right? Him sticking with that instead of mixing it up, going to what he knows. It's different when you pitch in spring training. It's different when you're working on things. You get into it facing an all right-handed lineup where, you know, typically the changeup goes against lefties, and suddenly you find yourself battling. You don't have that sinker to start. You start, you know, walking guys early in the game. It's not spring training where I'm working on my changeup. You have to trust that pitch. You have to believe in that pitch. And Carlos Rodon, so much over the last 2 years as a Yankees, it's felt like he doesn't believe in his secondary stuff. He doesn't believe in the changeup. He doesn't believe in the curveball. He's going to try and throw fastballs by you and then get ahead and throw the slider. That's all he's been. That's it. And it's game one, and I'm not going to make too much of it, but I got to tell you, I was thoroughly impressed with how Carlos Rodon threw the ball, how many pitches he worked in, how he attacked the hitters, how many swings and misses he got without really his best fastball. I mean, we've seen 97, 98. He was throwing 94 to 96, and then in the fourth, 92 after falling on his ass covering first base. But all in all, a great day for the Yankees. You did have the ninth inning be a little bit shaky, obviously, with Devin Williams. I honestly think you're better for it in that spot. Like, if you can get through your first time in a Yankee uniform, facing your former teammate, getting on the mound in the Bronx on a cold day, first time in the Yankee Stadium as the Yankee closer, if you can have that kind of inning where you don't have your good stuff, you can't find that changeup, that devastating airbender, you can't locate all your pitches, you get into a bases-loaded situation, and you come through, as much as, you know, you'd like to have the 1-2-3 inning, that can actually benefit Devin Williams. So overall, I thought it was a extremely fruitful, productive day. You've got the leadoff hitter. So many questions about Wells going deep in the first game, in his first at-bat. Obviously, Volpe, such a huge season for Volpe coming up. That third year, is he going to make that next step? He hits an opposite field home run in this game, plays an excellent shortstop. That first inning, it could not have gone better to get the Yankees back into it, because we head into this season as Yankee fans unsure about this team, not overly confident about this team. Not only just the injuries, clearly devastating to the starting rotation, and we got some news on Stanton we'll get to, but just overall, a lot of relying on youth early on, right? A lot of guys are going to have to step up. The lineup's not as potent. They lost Juan Soto. Injuries to the starting rotation. Like, there's a lot of concern about this Yankee team. And I got to tell you, the first inning where you've got Rodon mixing in his pitches and Jazz Chisholm makes a very nice play in the second base hole that, honestly, everyone in the ballpark was thinking the same thing. Does Glaber make that play? I don't know. I don't know if he does. But Jazz did. 1-2-3 inning in the first. Nice play by Jazz. Leadoff home run from Wells. And the 2025 Yankees were rolling. And it was a good day to be in the Bronx. And Met fans, you're just going to have to live with it. Day one goes to the Yankees as Juan Soto chases a slider away, as the offense was kind of inept all day until a couple of late rallies come up short. Clay Holmes doesn't pitch as well as he's pitched in spring training. It's the first of many. Let's not overreact. And the idea that we are literally breaking down. I know Juan Soto came through in the exact same spot last year with the Yankees. Same building, same pitcher, same situation. And he laced a bullet base hit to give the Yankees the lead against Hader for the New York Yankees. And today he swings at a slider after having a 3-0 count. But I can't believe I'm watching Sal. I got home from the game. I put on the Mets post game a little bit and I'm watching they're breaking down. Do you think he's trying to do too much? What do you make of this? Like, Hader's a great pitcher who made a good pitch in Juan Soto swung. Like, I understand he's Juan Soto. But he's gonna chase every once in a while. I know it was the game on the line, and you'd love to write that storybook, and I was listening in the car, and Howie Rose kept mentioning, the 24 Mets. If they have another page of the 24 Mets in their, you know, in their books, this is the time, and who could write a better script? And ultimately, they didn't write that good script. But it's day one of 162. So we'll overreact because it's what we do, and hell, it's fun. Yankees win, Mets lose. We've got other news around that, but to me, Carlos Rodon is the huge story of the day. Austin Wells had a big-time day. Volpe had a big-time day. And that's where we start here on this Friday morning.
Catch all the play-by-play with Susan Waldman and Dave Sims on the home of Yankees radio, The Fan.
All right, 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you now on this Friday morning. A half hour into our five-hour midnight ride. As we prepare, I'm jealous of the Mets in one aspect. They're right back at it today. I understand why they do it for rainouts and everything, but I hate having the day after opening day off. I'm raring to go and watch these games. And obviously for the Yankees, it was a good one. For the Mets again, I think when you look at Clay Holmes, and I was watching the post game, it's going to take some time to adjust to being a starter. Like, this is why I said, like, from the beginning, and I'm a Clay Holmes guy. I love Clay Holmes. I've defended Clay Holmes maybe more than any other player in a Yankee uniform just because the fan base was fed up with him by the end of last year with all the blown saves. And I understand. But I just think he's got really good stuff. I think that sinker is legit. I think his slider is legit. I think he's a really good pitcher. And I expect him to be able to, you know, be a serviceable starting pitcher. But my concern was, or my thought was, like, I don't know why. Like, when you look at Michael King, who had a terrible day today, by the way, with San Diego. When you look at Seth Lugo and Michael King, who are two prominent reliever turned starter candidates here, are two guys who've done it at an elite level. And they both were here in New York, so we know them. There are others, but you talk about King and Seth Lugo. Both of them pitched multiple innings. Both of them. I mean, Seth Lugo has 1,000 pitches. Seth Lugo literally has 9 or 10 pitches. Michael King, when he was a starter, he came up and transitioned to the bullpen for the Yankees. But he threw a bunch of pitches. He threw multiple innings, 2-3 innings at a time sometimes, when he was really dealing with the Yankees before his elbow injury. He was throwing 3 innings consistently, and then he would have off two days in a row or 3 days in a row, but he would throw multiple innings. He had multiple pitches. There was things like, I could look at those two guys, and Seth Lugo was begging to be a starter for forever. So I could look at those two guys, and I could say, I could see that. I mean, they came up as starters, as most pitchers do. Even Clay Holmes came up as a starter. And I could see, you know, he's got the pitchability. He's been able to throw multiple innings. Like, I could see that transition. I could see why you'd want to make that transition. I didn't see it in Clay Holmes. I got to be honest with you. I didn't see it. He has the sinker. He has the slider. And to me, he's a one-inning reliever, and that's what he's been. So it's not that he can't make it. And obviously, all of spring, he did an incredible job. And that changeup had been working all spring with good movement. It wasn't just a fluke thing. It was actually, you know, really a dynamic pitch for him. But I was concerned about it because he's never been a multi-pitch guy. And that's what I think today showed. I think today my fears of that came through in game one. And he's going to, you know, he's got plenty of time to figure this thing out. But that's why, like, when Michael King or Seth Lugo got into jams as relievers, when the crap was hitting the fan, when there's multiple guys on and you're up a run in the eighth and you've got first and third one out and you got to find it, they were able to still find it while going to other pitches. They had that repertoire built into who they were. So when the times were tough, they were able to say, okay, I'll throw a changeup here, then I'll throw the slider, then I'll throw my sinker, then I'll throw my four-seamer. Like, they were able to go to that as a reliever. Clay Holmes has known nothing over the last, 7 years of his career, 6 years of his career, other than, I'm in trouble, I'm going to the sinker. That's it, right? I have a world-class sinker, I'll throw my sweeper as well, but for the most part, this is real competition, the game is on the line, I'm throwing my best pitch. That's who Clay Holmes has been for 6 years. So to assume that, you know, right out of the gate, he's going to be able to, you know, navigate a lineup through 3 times or, you know, find it when the sinker's not there. That was, like, that's part of it, too. We've watched as Yankee fans, when the sinker's not there, Clay Holmes struggles. When he can't locate the sinker, he struggles. So what you're seeing is the first time out, opening day, him reverting back to the reliever version of Clay Holmes, because that's all he knows when the rubber meets the road. Now, he even said in the postgame that, you know, that it is a very right-handed lineup, and typically right-handed pitchers, you know, throw changeups to left-handed hitters, right? It's a left-handed batter attack pitch, where right-handed it's not as much. So you didn't expect him to use it a ton, but you got to use it a little bit more if you feel good about it and if you're going to try and get through multiple innings. So it's a learning curve. It's a learning process. He didn't have his great stuff. He didn't have his location, and he suffered for it. And he wasn't awful, and he got out of jams, and Acuña didn't do him any favors by throwing the ball away. And I thought, you know, Acuña had one of those games where not a great day at the plate, makes an error in the field that cost them a run, and then in the ninth gives you an incredible at-bat for a young man. Just an incredible at-bat against Hader. Where he's found, I was in the car listening to it. He's fouling off pitches. He starts out 0-2 and he works the walk after, what was it, a 12-13 pitch at bat. That's what you want to see from a young kid. Like, that's the development that even Clay Holmes needs to go through transitioning into a starting pitcher. But that was a good moment for Acuña, even though they fall short. But again, it's game one. The offense really, you know, Framber Valdez is a very good starting pitcher. He's got that sinker going. He's tough. It's the first game of the year. I mean, Soto did have a hit and walked a couple times. It's not like he had a bad game, but in that moment, and that's where we're going to, like, Mets fans, you got to deal with it right now. Not that you care, and that tomorrow's already here. There'll be another game tonight to move on from it, but, like, that at-bat for Soto, I don't know what we're expecting. And we're going over it like it's, you know, yes, the game came down to Juan Soto. He had a 3-0 count. Juan Soto, 3-0 count, you assume he's going to come through. That's what he's done his whole career, every single at-bat. It's just not the case. And that, I mean, he takes a full healthy cut at a 3-1 fastball, and then he gets fooled on a slot. And then I even didn't say fooled. It was the best pitch Hader threw that entire inning. But you have to admit, as a Yankee fan, and I know I've heard from a bunch, today the Yankees win. Carlos Rodon, a huge question mark, comes through. Everybody, you know, laughing about a catcher hitting leadoff. He hits a home run to start the game. Even Judge hits one off a base for an RBI double. You get your first hit for Cody Bellinger. Ben Rice hits one off the wall. They don't score a ton of runs, but they do just enough. The rest of the bullpen, we got to get to Mark Leiter, Weaver. And then even though it became, you know, kind of dicey in the ninth, Williams comes through, and then you look across town, and Clay Holmes doesn't have a good outing, not like he's been performing in spring training. 4 2/3, 5 hits, 3 runs, 2 of them earned, 4 walks is the problem. 4 walks in 4 2/3, and 4 Ks. And then, of course, Juan Soto, who left the Yankees to go to the Mets, who's going to be there for 15 years, who's their guy, who this Met fan base has taken into their loving embrace, and it's going to shape this Met franchise, and it's changed the dynamic of the city. It's changed who the Mets are. It's changed who the Yankees are. It's changed everything about baseball for Met fans. It's changed how they feel about their organization, how they feel about their fandom, how they feel about their standing in the city, how they walk taller into work. And for one moment, for a Yankee fan, after having to deal with that all offseason, so Met fans, you're going to have to live with it. Today, when you show up to work, you're going to have to live with it because you've had all offseason to crow, all offseason. And later today might be a different story. He might hit 3 home runs. I wouldn't put it past him. He's probably pissed off after that at bat. He's going to come back with a ferocious fire in his eyes and have an enormous game against Houston later today. But for one day, the Yankee fan gets to put their feet up and say, Yankees in the Bronx, take care of business. Carlos Rodon looks good. Wells hits the home run. A little bit of a shaky performance from Williams, but he gets his first save as a Yankee. All is good in Yankee land. While the Mets lose their first game, the transition from reliever to starter for Clay Holmes gets off to a somewhat rocky start, which I think is sort of expected. And Juan Soto, despite having a good day with his first hit as a New York Met and on base 3 times, comes up with the game on the line in the top of the ninth with an opportunity to either tie the game or give the Mets the lead, and he strikes out swinging. And so the Yankee fans today have an opportunity to have a little bit of a laugh, have a little bit of fun after hearing all offseason how they're doing nothing but coping. Cope harder. Cope harder. I can't tell you how many times I heard the word cope over this last, 3 months. Cope, 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 cope. And so today, on Overreaction Friday, the New York Yankee fan has a little bit of pep in their step. They're going to show up to work today a little bit more excited. The Marashes of the world are going to get to look at the Lugauers of the world and have a little bit of fun. But ultimately, we're all winners because baseball's back. And it was a great day for the Yankees, and it's just day one for the Mets. And we saw the first time ever for a catcher to hit a leadoff home run in the history of baseball. That's crazy. And I think Wells at the top of the order, man. I'm telling you, I like this offense. And here's the other thing about this offense, right? And they weren't even that potent today. Peralta is a good pitcher. Peralta has a really good fastball changeup combination. He is a good starting pitcher. They got to him early with the home run, obviously, and then Volpe hits one that I would have never guessed. In fact, you know how much I would have never guessed that? I was sitting in the stands, obviously. I remember. I have to go deep into the trenches of my mind. But I remember when Volpe hit that ball, I never in a million years thought it was going out. It didn't have the sound. It was, to quote Major League, it was way too high. There was just, I had no thought that ball was going out. I honestly didn't. And for Anthony Volpe, it's going to be a big year for him, right? So much talk about him making this next step in year three, right? He had 20 home runs as a rookie. The home runs were down last year. He tried to get a little bit more contact. If you've been paying attention to spring training, his swing speed is up. He's been swinging the bat harder. He kind of made that transition. Year one, he was swinging the bat hard. Then he kind of transitioned to try and put the ball in play a little bit more last year and didn't swing as hard. Now he's back to swinging hard. You're hoping he could get some power, some speed, get on base. He's going to be hitting in the middle of the lineup and not the top of the lineup. So, maybe that power can play a little bit as well as stolen bases, not in front of Judge. So a big season for Anthony Volpe, where really for me, and I've said this, if Anthony Volpe has another 650, 660, 670 OPS, after year three, when he was coming up as in the same, comp, maybe not as good. I don't think anybody thought he was going to be necessarily as good, but he was in the same conversation as Bobby Witt Jr. Same conversation as Bobby Witt Jr. and Gunnar Henderson. And he has been nowhere close. I mean, those two guys are in the MVP conversations. If it wasn't for Judge's incredible season, Bobby Witt Jr. is an MVP on most years. Gunnar Henderson was the MVP leading candidate halfway through the year. Like, this is who he's been on the same, trajectory as. This is who he's supposed, this is, he was a top five prospect right with those guys. And he's been nowhere near the same kind of offensive player. So this is a huge year for him. And to show the power, and I know it's in Yankee Stadium and everybody's talking about how the home run shouldn't count. Well, it does. And Anthony Volpe, and if you don't believe me when I tell you live at the ballpark, I had no thought that ball was going out. Listen to Dave Sims and tell you if me and him agree.
1-1 pitch, jammed him. Hits it to right field. That's a good jam shot. It's on the track. Looking up, it's gone. Oh, my goodness. Off the middle of the bat, Anthony Volpe muscles one out. And the Yankees have a 2-0 lead.
Jammed him. That's exactly what I thought. And when you watch it on TV, I went back, when I got home and I watched it. I've been all over the place. I drove all the way back home. Then I drove back here. You're welcome. But it looked like he jammed him. That was not like a classic. Like, I was surprised Volpe had enough power to get that ball out. That wasn't an outside fastball that he drove to right field. That was kind of like on the inner half of the plate. And I didn't even thought he got his hands through completely to get the barrel to the bat. I really didn't. And yet that still went out. And it wasn't, Wells was really a hard hit line drive that just got over the wall. Volpe's cleared it by five or six rows. I mean, it wasn't it's still a Yankee Stadium home run. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to tell you it's out. It's probably out at maybe two or three other ballparks in all of Major League Baseball. But that was still a significant a significant home run. To go the other way like that, that's power I'm not sure we knew Volpe had, so that's good to see. Now, apparently, I'm being told it's worth playing the Joe Buck call, who on the Wells home run gave a little nod to Michael Kay and did a see ya. So I want to hear, let's hear the Anthony Volpe home run from Joe Buck on ESPN.
I'm talking to Bill.
Yeah.
Here's a pop fly into right. Back at the track. This ball will carry and go.
Play it one more time. Start from the beginning.
The second of the day for the Yankees. I'm talking to Bill.
Yeah.
Here's a pop fly into right.
Yeah.
Back at the track. This ball will carry and go.
Yeah. I have to admit, and I'm not one for this. Who cares? It went out. I don't care about Yankee Stadium home runs. If you look at the numbers, it's actually not the bandbox you think it is. It's not as much a home run hitting haven as it used to be or that people think it is. But yes, it does have the short porch. And both Wells and Volpe's home runs probably don't go out in many other ballparks. Wells, significant, probably almost certainly doesn't go out in any other ballpark. But man, I'm not one for that crap. I don't care. A home run's a home run. But I have to admit, I don't know if the wind was blowing at that exact moment. That ball went in the air. I said, oh, man. And both broadcasters jammed him and popped flying right. It doesn't matter. It all counts the same. It all counts the same. But that was, I mean, that Wells home run, too. Because I got to tell you, let's be honest, the Yankee fan needs a pick-me-up. I don't know why. I mean, this is part of the reason I fight with Yankee fans, because I don't think you should need a pick-me-up. They were just in the World Series. I know it got ugly in the fifth inning. And I know they lost Juan Soto. But the down-in-the-dumps mentality from so many Yankee fans, after losing Juan Soto and losing the World Series, and, you know, after only being, you know, one of the better teams in baseball for 30 consecutive seasons. They need a pick-me-up. And I got to tell you, that first inning, Jazz makes a good play that, if you weren't thinking it, you're not a Yankee fan. Everyone watching in that ballpark was thinking, I wonder if Glaber makes that play. It wasn't overly special, but you wonder if Jazz is that much of a better, and it just speaks to how much better you're hoping the team is on different elements, right? Because I don't think there's a question. You look at this team, and there are a couple of facts about the New York Yankees that are guarantees that they are better than last year. I don't know about overall, but you look at this, there are three aspects of the team that you know they're going to be better at. Maybe even four. One clearly is going to be defensively. They are far better defensively. Judge in right over Soto is a huge upgrade. Bellinger over Judge in center, huge upgrade. Jazz at second, huge upgrade. At this point in their careers, Goldschmidt over Rizzo, huge upgrade. Right? Okay, left field is probably the only position you're worse at, but Verdugo is such a zero offensively that you'll live with it. But defensively, they're going to be better. Back end of the bullpen. As much as I love Clay Holmes, and I know he had a shaky outing, so therefore, you know, overreaction Friday. I don't know about this Devin Williams guy. I don't know. 1.83 ERA, yeah, in Milwaukee, maybe. This is the Bronx. But as much as I love Clay Holmes, Devin Williams has been one of the best, if not the best reliever in baseball for 3 years. So, like, they're better at the back end of the bullpen with Weaver and Williams. And we got to get to Mark Leiter, too, who had probably the most impressive inning of the day. And someone who, if he's going to pitch like that, is going to add to this bullpen. But specifically the back end of the bullpen with Weaver and Williams, defensively, the athleticism and speed on the team. And then the other and final one that we know they're going to be better at, because I got to tell you, even day one, right? It's opening day. I might feel different in a month. But watching the team and watching the lineup, and despite not really pounding the baseball and only scoring four runs and two of them being on solo home runs and one on a ground ball that hit third base, I'm well aware of what the offensive production was yesterday. But I got to tell you, sitting there, watching it, looking up at the scoreboard, watching the offense, I felt so much better about 6, 7, 8, 9 about this Yankee lineup than I have the last previous lineups by a mile. Like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, you would get to the point. Now, again, day one, we'll see where it goes. But even day one last year, like, you just, you would get to 7, 8, 9, and it just felt like there was nothing there. You had no confidence in anything going on 7, 8, 9. And with Oswaldo Cabrera, as long as he's hitting left-handed against right-handed pitching, like, I feel really good about the depth of this lineup. I don't feel like, oh, here we go. This is a waste of an inning. 7, 8, 9 coming up in the fifth. Forget this. Just get me to the sixth. Like, I don't feel that way. So I think they're better defensively. I think they're better in the back end of the bullpen. I think they're better on the base paths. And I honestly, without question, feel like the lineup is deeper. Now, we don't know if it's going to be as good. In fact, I don't think it will be, because Juan Soto is a force that you can't replace just by being slightly better 7, 8, 9. I would still take, if I could trade how I felt about 7, 8, 9 last year for Juan Soto, I would. I would. I'd take back the crappy 7, 8, 9 to get Juan Soto. I think any Yankee fan telling them differently is just not being realistic with themselves. We'll see. But it just feels better. It feels better. Day one, it felt better. And I really think that first inning, the Jazz play, the Wells home run, followed by the Volpe home run, and then for me, the turning point of the game, that fifth inning. That, at that point, the game is still 2-1. You feel like Rodon is a little bit on the ropes. He had that play at first base where he falls, and you're not sure if he's hurt. The fastball falls to 92 miles an hour the rest of that inning. And you're just thinking, here we go, Rodon. He's just went through something. The cards are stacked against him. This offense hasn't done anything now for 3 or 4 innings. And out comes Rodon after I thought they would probably take him out. And he pitches a dominant fifth and strikes out all three batters. To me, that was the turning point in the game where I felt a hell of a lot better. Because then you get into the sixth, seventh, eighth, and you feel good about the bullpen. And I thought sending him back out there for the sixth was the right thing. And here's another thing. We'll get into Aaron Boone. Because I hear this a lot. I hear this a lot about Aaron Boone. I can't remember one single game that Aaron Boone won for the New York Yankees. When's a game that Aaron Boone made a decision that and because of that decision, the Yankees won? I can't remember any. But I remember a hell of a lot of games that his decisions directly led to losses. Like, when is he ever a positive? And these are the type of games. These are the type of games that no one remembers or nobody would write down as the manager winning them the game. And I wouldn't even go that far, because I don't believe the decisions necessarily win or lose games all the time. But if you look at this, Carlos Rodon is your opening day starter when everybody, and I mean everybody, was screaming for Max Fried to be the starter. Austin Wells as your leadoff hitter when he's got no speed, he's not a prototypical, what are we doing here? He hits the home run to start the game. And then in the sixth inning with Sal Frelick coming up, who does have two hits against him, but is a left-handed pitcher, he goes to Tim Hill, and Tim Hill gets out of the jam. Then he goes to Leiter, and I'm sure everybody's going, Leiter? When did Leiter become the back end of the bullpen guy? He throws a dominant 12-pitch, 1-2-3 inning. Like, those are the little subtle things that we don't give him credit for. No one's going to point back, and I'm not saying you should necessarily, but just realize when you make the statement, I don't ever remember Aaron Boone winning us a game, that's because nobody cares. Players win, managers lose. That's how a lot of fans think. The guy sitting next to me is going on and on about how, you know, manager sucks, he's not going to go anywhere until Cashman's gone, Cashman loves him, he does whatever he wants, you know, all the same crap you hear all the time about Aaron Boone. And I'm just saying, if you take a deeper look at this, if you were the manager of the New York Yankees, Max Fried would have started today. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong, or Max Fried would have lost, and who knows what happens on Saturday. But I think Carlos Rodon pitching well on opening day is actually a really big positive. And you might not hit Austin Wells first. You might put Jazz Chisholm there. You might put someone else there. Right now, he's thrived in spring, and he just hit the first at-bat of the year out to the bleachers in right, in the short porch. He brought in Tim Hill at the right time. Like, No one's going to look at this game and say Aaron Boone won them this game, when in fact, those decisions all worked out. So when the Yankees continue to win 90-plus games every year and you say to yourself, I don't remember a single game Aaron Boone made a positive decision to help them win, remember that there are plenty you just don't give a damn.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Full windup by Clemens. And a slow run hit high in the air, deep to center field, way back it may go. Gone! A grand slam! A grand slam! Mike Piazza!
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, so I'm going to get to your calls right here at 888-808-1019. I do have to play some sound of Evan in a little bit on the other side of the hour, because I might have to get on him and I might have to get on Sal a little bit about this Juan Soto bat. We'll see. 888-808-1019. But Evan, of course, I guess did a Rico Bronya. Someone sent me the clip. He asked the question about when would we start booing Juan Soto, or when would Met fans start booing Juan Soto. So we'll find out if game one, it's already here. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Brad in Caldwell. What's up, Brad?
Yeah, we're not booing him yet, sir.
I would hope not.
Not yet.
I would hope not.
It's Brad from Caldwell. Not yet.
I would hope not.
Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
That was a ball, but let's, you have the better, you have the Kings of New York. But I really wanted to ask you something else. I love baseball, and you do a great job.
Thank you.
How was the ice cream when he ate half of it?
What's that?
You know, when you had, I'm not going to ask about that, but when you had the tiramisu, how was that?
We ended up not getting the tiramisu.
Really?
Yeah, we ended up not getting.
Oh, I was. You were building it up.
I know. I got to try.
Right. I'm just saying, you're the the host.
Well,
so,
I understand, Brad. I know. Are you talking about when I ate Marash's ice cream? Yes, I ran into Sean Marash, who was doing a live hit for the afternoon show, and he was standing there, of course, right outside of the Mr. Softy. Like, it was too good to pass up. Like, it wasn't scheduled. He didn't say, hey, come on, or anything like that. I was walking past the food court, and there's Sean holding, he's got the headset on. He's got a thing around his waist. He's holding the phone. I'm like, what the hell is this guy doing? He looked like a one-man band. I thought he was going to start doing a Wonderwall or something. I was like, what is going on here? And he's standing right outside the Mr. Frosty's, or Mr. Softy, rather, excuse me, window, whatever, and he's standing there, and I look over, and he's got the phone, and I could see Tiki and Evan on it, so I was like, all right, let me go over there and say hello, and then they dared me to eat his ice cream, so I did. I had a little bit of ice cream. I didn't have the tiramisu, and I also have to make one complaint. I forgot to mention this, too. I didn't want to do it in the open, but I do have a complaint about the New York Yankees, and not the baseball team, the operation there at the stadium, and I went on this whole rant about Yankee Stadium and how much I love it, and I can't stand when people knock Yankee Stadium. It's not like the old Yankee Stadium, all the crap. Yankee Stadium's great, but what I do have to admit is, today, opening day, my wife and I were, like, reading up on all the new food. We saw the news, videos, and I think Sam Ryan was there doing it last week, and all the new food, tiramisu in a helmet that unfortunately we didn't get a chance to do, but I'll be back and I'll get a chance to do it. But tiramisu in the helmet and all these different things, and one of the ones were dumplings. Me and my wife both like dumplings. So she was like looking on her phone to find out what section of the stadium the dumplings are. We walk all the way to like the opposite side of the stadium to get these dumplings. We walk up, and I think I ordered chicken fingers, and then I said, all right, and can we get an order of the dumplings? And the woman looked at me, and she goes, sorry, opening day, the dumplings haven't come yet. And I'm like, wait a minute. I've seen, you guys have a press release. I've seen like three or four different day that you had at Yankee Stadium going over all the new food. You got new dumplings that I personally sought out and walked around half the stadium to find. And you're telling me on opening day that the dumplings haven't arrived yet? Not we ran out, not the fryer's broken, No, the dumplings aren't here. How have the dumplings not made it to the Bronx yet? How is that possible? They were there when you did the whole spiel and smorgasbord that you presented to the media. Somehow you found enough dumplings to give to Peter Schwartz. But how, you know, it wasn't there for me on opening day, I don't know. Like that, I don't know. So I'm sorry. I love you. I love the building. I will be there a ton. I got my season credential, which I don't know who sends out for that. But they took a picture off of my Facebook page from like 30 years ago. I'm literally 21 in the picture. I don't know where they got it from or why no one's asked me. Or, you know, I have headshots that the station uses. Why wasn't that sent? I don't know. It's me in a Beatles sweatshirt in my old house's kitchen when I must have been like literally 21, 22 years old. But that's the picture from that's on the press credential. But I love the place, love the building, love the food, love everything about it. I get into arguments all the time with people who talk about the old stadium and how much better it was and blah, blah, blah. But you could have had the dumplings ready on opening day. You could have had the dumplings ready. Not happy about it. That's all I'm saying. I mean, you walk all that way for dumplings and then they're not there. They have like four different flavors and it's up on the board. It's there on the menu. Like, don't put in parentheses, not here yet or something. I don't know. I wouldn't have picked that place. I was like 2/3 into the order and I would have went somewhere else.
Not here yet?
That's what the woman told me.
Well, no. But I mean, that's not going to put on the board. If anything, you're just going to cover it up.
Right. Or so, yeah, I don't know. Something.
Cover it up.
You just write unavailable.
Yeah, whatever. Unavailable or whatever. Yeah, I understand you don't put not here yet. I'm just saying that's what she said to me. Mm-hmm. So that's why I use that term. Well, you're right. That wouldn't be the best option to put on the board. I'm just saying she said, I'm sorry, they're not here yet.
You're right. But good job by then. They made you walk across the whole stadium and you still got it from that. One particular place.
Yeah, but I could have got chicken fingers from anywhere. I didn't have to go all the way over there. Huh? We were looking for that specific thing. And then I got chicken fingers because I wasn't sure how big the dumplings are. An order of dumplings, it's not, you know. So I figured we'll get some chicken fingers, we'll get the dumplings. And then I ordered the chicken fingers first and then, oh, no dumplings. And I'm like, I'm not going to cancel the order or go somewhere else for something else. I would have preferred to go somewhere else. Like if I was going to get a signature item along with chicken fingers, I would have went to the place right next door to the 99 burger, which I still haven't had yet. With the Wagyu beef Judge 99 burger. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So there were other options and other places to go.
Did you get the bucket for the chicken fingers or just the regular?
Just the regular. Yeah, chicken and fries.
Regular.
Which, you know, the one thing about the chicken fingers and fries I noticed is it's a good amount either way. The bucket is an enormous thing of fries. But if you get just the regular handheld, and it's still plenty, chicken fingers and fries, it's only like a 68 cents upgrade to get the garlic fries. But if you get the bucket, it's almost $4. Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
Is there that much more?
I don't know if it's four times the amount. That's what I'm saying. I don't think it's four times the fries.
I don't know.
Maybe.
It's a big bucket.
Yeah. But like the handheld one, they give you a good portion. That's like 68 cents to upgrade to garlic fries. But then they got to charge you $4 if you get the bucket?
That's how they get you.
I guess that's how they get you.
I mean, at that point, I mean, what's $4?
And also, another complaint, I think this is Yankee related. I'm not positive if they run the parking lot I went to, whatever, but up $10 from last year.
So what is it now?
$49 to park. $49.
I'm pretty sure they don't run any of the parking.
Yeah, I'm not sure they do. That's what I'm saying. I don't think they do. So it's not. This is.
I think the city runs the Mets and Yankees, but obviously the Yankees have more on the street. I think the city runs them.
Yeah. Well, I'll ask this: were you able to prepay? Did the machine actually work? Because that's my issue.
Yeah. No, I pulled into a lot that has like a person there, so I handed someone my credit card, and it worked. Obviously. Okay. Well, I don't like to take the chances of the bigger ones with the. What are they, the roundabout or whatever they would call it, the level parking?
Mm-hmm.
Because depending on when you leave or what's going on, you could get stuck in those levels forever.
No, I get that.
So I pay for just lots, and there's like a kiosk as you drive in.
Yeah, where
the person is.
I know, but the machine itself is supposed to be there to be able to do it self-serve, just go up to a pay. Uh-huh. It never works.
No, it never works, I know.
Never works.
No, I know.
That's my big gripe. Like, what the hell are we doing here? Like, how hard is this?
You think there'd be enough money to get it fixed? $50 a car?
What's him saying? You can't figure out the machine? I got to go to the guy?
That's a lot of
money. Slow it down, give the card to the lady as you're driving out. Like, we don't have enough traffic to try to go through here.
And that's why when people say it's a lot of money to go to the game, I'll sometimes push back and go, I don't know. Yeah, maybe Yankees, Mets, or Mets, Red Sox, or Mets, Dodgers, Yankees, Dodgers. But, like, if you want to go to, like, a random Saturday against the Twins, you can find inexpensive tickets. You can get in the building for 15
to 20
bucks.
It's everything else.
I mean, you know, one beer is $19. Parking is $50. Yeah. You want to get, you know, what French fries for your kids, it's $8.
Next thing you know, you're upgrading the fries. You're out $4 with the garlic fries.
It's out of control. Yeah. That's when you order the fries, the garlic or regular, and your son goes, garlic. And you turn to him and you're like, you got that $4?
I mean, you realize it costs us $50 just to park this car.
Yeah, exactly right.